This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember, you can subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app. And you can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Thanks for Sharing. I'm Jackie P.
I'm John T.
Today, we're going to be doing the second trait of functional adults. Last episode, we talked about trait number one of functional adults. So today is trait number two, and that is functional adults are able to set and maintain healthy boundaries.
Yeah, and this is, so not too long ago, we did a two-part episode on boundaries.
Right.
So we're not going to focus so much on what boundaries are and how to set them. We're going to talk more about how being a functional adult informs the kind of boundaries that we can set and
right.
what those boundaries feel like.
And how having boundaries helps us to maintain functional, mature adulthood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple nights ago, I had gotten home and, I was going to go do something with my family and they weren't home quite yet. So I went to the neighborhood coffee shop and I sat there and I listened again to Pia Melody talk about the five traits of functional adults. And I cannot recommend her stuff highly enough.
Mm-hmm.
I just listened to 15 minutes of the first part of her lecture on shame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so dense.
It
with
is so,
great things.
Yeah. So much information in really short segments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could, like, I was listening to it and I was thinking, this is a brilliant person who has distilled down some really big things into very powerful
mm-hmm.
words. And some of the things that stood out to me as she talked about boundaries, she said that functional adults can set limits on the incoming reality and the reality of other people to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
She said functional adults also can set limits on their own reality that protects others from being offended against. And that kind of awareness, and I think that kind of ability to choose what comes in and goes out,
mm-hmm.
I think that's part of that functional adult part.
Mm-hmm.
And where having a checklist of how to set and maintain boundaries
mm-hmm.
isn't going to really get us into this feeling place where we're evaluating what needs and should be coming in and
mm-hmm.
what needs and shouldn't be coming in.
So one example, when I heard her talk about this, that I remembered from my life, when I was, you know, I had a couple of kids, I think at the time I had like three kids and I worked at that time. I only worked like 2 days a week, I think, or maybe 1 day a week. Anyway, a neighbor down the street had said that she would watch my kids. Right. And I didn't go into work until a little bit later. So I usually left for work about 1:00 and then my husband got home about 5:30. So it was only a couple of hours. And she's like, my kids will just think that they're having a play date, you know, once a week or whatever. And so she had been watching my kids for, I don't know, maybe a year at this point. And then one day I went to drop my kids off and she said, hey, I've got to tell you. And she's like, I've just been avoiding telling you and I feel really bad about this, but I can't watch your kids anymore. And she had had something come up in her life that was creating a conflict with her being able to take my kids this afternoon. And she said, so, you know, like, I'll finish out this month, but then next month, like, I just can't watch your kids anymore. And, you know, of course, as a mom, you're like, oh, what am I going to do with childcare now? And it feels like this panic feeling because I really trusted her. My kids loved going there.
That's also so functional for you because usually when I hear stuff like that, I think, oh, what did my kids do? Like, what did they ruin?
Well, I had those experiences with my kids. But she was just like, I feel so bad. And I've thought about if there's any way that I could make it work. And there was this moment where I remember being aware and thinking, I think I could manipulate her to do this and to do it anyway, because she felt so bad. And
mm-hmm.
I don't remember now what the circumstances were. But there was a circumstance that I could have manipulated and gotten her to watch my kids.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, no, that's not okay for me to do that. Even though it would be helpful for me and I want her to watch my kids, I'm not going to do that. Right. Yeah. And in that moment, I had to contain my own boundary and say, no, I'm protecting her from me.
Well, and really, like, as you're talking about that, that reminds me of, like, I don't even know if I have the words for this, but I know somewhere between when I was 17 and 18, somewhere between those summers, I started to get this ability to be able to see how others experienced me and to not shrink in shame or avoidance from that. I would say that between those years, and maybe the people in my life would feel this really differently, but I say between those years is where I got much less mean and a lot more relationally focused.
Yeah.
There was a lot of not containing myself when I should have before then, but I just remember it was almost like this new part of my brain that was accessible that I could say, wait a minute, that would be hurtful, or wait a minute, I don't actually believe in that, or that would be wrong, or I don't actually want to go down that road, and could kind of put that in check. So as you're talking about that, that reminds me of kind of that, that's a functional adult ability.
Right.
That's not something we can put on a checklist that says, make sure you don't step on others' toes. Like, that really comes from this level of self-awareness and compassion.
And knowing when we're starting to move our space into their space in order to get what we want.
As we were preparing for this episode, Jackie, you found some quotes in a book, Recovery Zone, written by Dr. Carnes. We wanted to read and discuss a couple of those. I think the first one was about boundaries.
Yeah.
If you have this book at home, it's on page 203 of Recovery Zone.
And this is in the exercise, which if you have this book, this is a great exercise. This is in the Shame Core exercise. And so in this one, he's talking about the five paths that get us out of shame. And so this is what he said about boundaries, which is one of those paths that get us out of the shame space. He says, in that spiritual space between self and the world, a series of barriers exist that preserve the integrity of that space. We call them boundaries. They are filters which assist in what gets through and what does not. From the inside, trust your personal discernments that do not offer shortcuts. That way, you forestall potential bargains with chaos. Like the movie Godzilla, kill potential monsters while they are little. Boundaries depend on articulating a personal voice that is clear about bottom line decisions and non-negotiables. This works best when there has been a reliable review of scripts, stories, judgments, beliefs, and dreams for validity. This is ongoing work that is organized by the inner observer, who does not take things personally. In essence, this is what a fourth step is. When boundaries exist and an honest inventory is complete, you will not make assumptions nor take things personally either.
Listening to that again, I was in a session this week with a client who came in a lot of shame and a lot of anger. And we had to do some work on him getting back in his window of tolerance. And as he was there, I helped him with a skill that kind of helped him separate what he thought others were thinking about him and what he was experiencing with himself. And as we worked on staying grounded in that place, we kind of call it like having some Teflon on the outside of him, where things that might feel threatening or confusing could kind of slip off and he could just feel what he was feeling. It was really amazing how quickly he was able to get clear on the shame that was related to corrective action that he needed to take, and the shame that was like, you're a piece of crap and nobody likes you. And so as you were reading that, kind of that clear inner voice part really stood out to
me. Well, and as you were talking about that, I thought of what we talk about a lot of times in recovery, having a zipper on the inside. Right? That says, I control the zipper. Like, it's not on the outside where people can unzip and have access to the other side of the coat or the jacket or whatever with the zipper, but the zipper's on my side, and I get to decide what comes in and what goes out.
I think there's a really big difference between that mindful zipper on the inside and the things that we choose to do, and maybe those very same things that we might do when it's impulsive or we're not choosing, or it's kind of that escape thing. You know, he talks about in that quote, he talks about limiting the external reality. And at first glance, you might look at that and say, you know, I think of that M. Scott Peck quote where he says mental health is the commitment to reality at all costs. I think the commitment to reality is not the commitment to having all reality live in my house all the time.
Right.
Sometimes that commitment is, I know it exists, but there are aspects of that reality or parts of me right now that aren't ready for that. And right. I'm going to be very mindful about what I interface with.
Yeah. So I visit that reality every so often because mm-hmm. living with that reality might be too painful right mm-hmm. now.
I mean, that's the reason why we develop the defense mechanisms that we do. And a lot of the, not so positive, not so helpful things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all, I would say, a non-mindful attempt at those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the
and wouldn't
the
be
reactive.
A commitment to reality.
Right, right. It's more that kind of that guttural feeling I have to avoid,
mm-hmm.
not really knowing what we're needing to avoid or what
right.
we can't handle. So when I think of that boundary on the inside thing, I am known to pick up a series on Netflix or a series of movies
yeah.
and then like have it take up. Here's an understatement. Have it take up a little bit too much of my life until it's over.
You and most people with Netflix subscriptions.
Right.
Well, we
it's
all
not,
do that.
It's not my fault. They make it that way.
They do.
I don't even have to tell it to play the next episode. It just knows.
And
I
am
it.
Always like, when the next episode starts, it says previously on. And I'm like, why does it think I need that? Like, I just watched that 5 minutes ago.
You're so cute for thinking it's been a week. So I the other night... I had some time to myself after my kids went to bed and my wife was out with friends, and I was telling her, I need to do something really meaningful for self-care tonight. And I said, it can't be TV and it can't be working on work stuff,
mm.
which is kind of the stuff that I impulsively go to, like
uh-huh.
without choice. And so as I was thinking about it throughout the day, I recently finished listening to a book called Batman and Psychology.
Oh yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed it. And I knew about Batman. I didn't know about the other cast of characters. So as I listened to this, I was like, I want to go back and watch those Christopher Nolan movies again, the most recent previous, the Christian Bale Batman. I was like,
okay.
I want to watch that again because there are some parts of this that feel more fleshed out for me. So I was thinking about throughout the day and I was like, but no, I can't watch TV. Like TV wouldn't be, I said it couldn't be TV.
Be
and then I realized, or I thought like, I think this might be more mindful. Like, there's things I'm going to look for.
Uh-huh.
And so I started watching The Dark Knight, the one with the Joker, and I was like, I want to look at what this author was talking about with the dynamic between the Batman and Joker. And it was something, you know, maybe kind of stupid or kind of silly, but bringing that mindfulness to it made it something so much more than turning the TV on in the background and just having noise.
Just kind of numbing.
Yeah, versus something that I really enjoyed the images. I liked the sounds. I liked the thoughts that came with it.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of our escape behaviors can actually be some really mindful things, but we have to turn that intentionally
right.
to it.
Yes.
And so, you know, as we're talking about boundaries, some of those limits on the external boundaries are some of the same things that we do to avoid, but we're mindful and we're choiceful about
uh-huh.
it instead of reactionary.
So let's talk about, because in this it says this ongoing work is organized by the inner observer who does not take things personally. So let's talk a little bit. I don't think on this podcast yet we've really talked about the inner observer.
No, I don't think we have.
So let's talk about what is an inner observer.
I first came across that idea I don't remember where. I know it was sometime when I started my CSAT training because we made it part of our beginnings program.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what the inner observer is this part of you that can observe what's going on without being involved in it. I
right.
think about it as my internal Dan Rather.
Yes.
Like the news reporter.
Hopefully journalism's returning to some integrity, but the old
we'll
style
we'll
news
see.
Reporters where they were simply reporting facts and what was observable and
mm-hmm.
not getting into drawing conclusions
commentary
or telling people what this means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe not your current Dan Rather.
Well, actually I think I've been following him on Facebook and I think he came out of retirement recently
oh.
and started some stuff because he talks about being hopeful that journalism recaptures its integrity.
Yeah. Yeah, so that ability to just observe what's going on
mm-hmm.
without attaching meaning to it.
Yeah.
In that way, I think our inner observer is kind of this inner truth teller.
Yeah.
It's not wrapped up in emotions. It's not wrapped up in agendas. It's just that inner commentary about what we're experiencing. Yeah.
So I think of the inner observer as this very calm, kind of matter of fact. Like, they don't get panicked about what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. They're not running around like Chicken Little saying the sky is falling, right? Mm-hmm. They're just noticing what's happening. Like, oh, this happened. Oh, and then I felt this in my body. Oh, and then this happened and I felt this in my body, right? It's just really kind of this calm observation about what is going on. And they're aware of everything, but they're not really getting into it. Like, I know you use the analogy. I've started using the analogy too of the riverbed versus the river, mm-hmm. right? And that if we're like caught up in the river, then we're going to have different feelings than when we're safe on the riverbed and simply observing what's going on mm-hmm. about the river.
And very conscious about our position on that riverbank, making sure that, you know, sometimes we can get so fascinated with what's going on in the river that we find ourselves chest deep.
Yeah.
And so that inner observer is really rooted in this grounded, non-judgmental place. Uh-huh. When I'm working with clients on that, I'll often ask them, can you locate in your body where your inner observer originates?
Mm.
And just finding in your body where that voice comes from that's fair, that's non-judgmental, that's observational.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really when we get just the facts, we take the emotion or we take the judgment out of it. I should say the over-emotion. Emotion needs to be there, but when we take the over-emotion out of it, then we really get that space where we can actually evaluate what's happening mm-hmm. for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he talks about in that boundaries. Our boundaries come after this very careful examination and evaluation.
Right.
And then it's clearly stated.
Yeah. So there's, it's kind of a slow movement. I mean, and when I say slow, I may mean, you know, like 3 seconds versus a half a second.
Right.
Like, it's not really slow and drawn out so that it seems awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of a slow, methodical observation mm-hmm. of what's going on.
Which, back to the functional adult side, one of the things that we know about brain development is there are certain structures and connections in the brain that aren't fully formed until around 25.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, like, that's outer cortical work. If I know this isn't scientifically accurate, but I think, like, the brain grows from the bottom up. Like, we get those very basic things in place first, like the ability to feel emotions, express those emotions, like some basic memory stuff. And then as we mature, I think that outer cortex matures with mm-hmm. us, and we start to see more connections between the outer cortex and the mm-hmm. limbic system. And that's where we really get those adult abilities to observe the emotion without getting wrapped up in it.
Right.
And so, you know, that trait is actually, again, that's not something that we can put on a checklist. That's more a way of being that we have to cultivate.
Mm-hmm. And it, in some ways, that inner observer is bringing things that are unconscious, maybe like how I'm doing breathing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is not something that I'm necessarily conscious about, right? I don't have to think about breathing in order to breathe. My body does that. It's one of those first things that the brain starts working on. But that happens automatically, right? But the inner observer can pay attention, like, oh, wow, my breath just got really short and high in my body.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've brought my breathing into the conscious, mm-hmm. right? That inner observer helped move that. What was happening in my body that maybe happens unconsciously, like I can't simply say or have this thought that says, hey, Jackie, you know, bring your breathing really high and short. Like,
I wish, because then I'd be like,
I mean,
no.
I could do it, but it doesn't have the same impact, right? As it does when it just naturally, like, something happens and my breathing moves there. Mm-hmm. But my inner observer can notice that and then say, oh, this just happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Breaking news.
And based on that, this just happened, then I think our inner observer starts to get curious.
Right.
What's going on for me? And I think that's where that evaluation comes in and the boundaries come in. That after we've gotten curious about what's going on for us, we start to identify the things in our environment or the things within mm-hmm. us that we need to protect against or that we need to be more selective about paying attention to.
And I love that part that I read where Dr. Carnes talks and he says, boundaries is that spiritual space between the self and the world.
Yeah.
I love that. analogy.
Yeah, and knowing too, with that space between ourselves and the world, that is not a fixed space.
Right.
Not every situation is going to call for the same buffer, the same mm-hmm. boundary. And that, again, goes to that functional adult ability to discern,
mm-hmm.
to know what's appropriate for what situation.
Right.
And
to allow our boundaries to move with us and to be adaptable mm-hmm. rather than fixed and rigid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, that's something I look at my kids who, they need structure. They don't do very well with the unknown. They don't do very well with, we're going to try this and maybe that, like,
sometimes this, sometimes that.
Yeah. They melt down with that.
Uh-huh.
I don't do great with that, but as an adult, I can be a little more flexible. I can understand
uh-huh.
a little more when things need to give and take. And I, again, you're not going to put that on a checklist and say, I'm going to learn how to be emotionally flexible.
Right.
Like, that's going to come as you mature.
Yeah.
And your boundaries will follow that. There was another part that we wanted to read here from that, where you talked about vision.
Yeah. So this is just the skill right under boundaries for getting out of shame. And it says, vision is the core path because it emanates from what really matters. Its parameters are determined by being at your best, zone, flow, excellence. Vision works best with a defined mission built on your unique abilities, passion, and meaning. With a working mission in place, mistakes are part of learning and being imperfect. Mistakes add clarity and focus to your life. Plus, mistakes help you measure progress. Use your vision to make goals that are specific, and measurable. You have to have a plan.
I really like that in conjunction with boundaries, because usually when I start working on boundaries with clients, they'll want to go through like every possible situation that could happen mm-hmm. in their life. And like, okay, so give me my three things I have to do in this situation. But then what if this is different? Like, what am I supposed to do different?
The whole what if game.
Yeah. Yeah. Which,
endless what if game.
Again, like on my ride down here, I had my 4-year-old with me on my ride to the office because my wife and I were going to switch, and the whole ride down was this what if game with him. And I don't even know, like, I don't know where this kid's train of logic comes from, but we just talked what ifs the whole uh-huh. time. When we move from that what if I have to know every scenario into this more vision place, I think it's more of that my life is guided by principles. It's guided by what I feel called to. It's guided by what's important to me, rather than the right way to respond to every situation.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're exploring some of that space around being a functional adult and setting appropriate boundaries, I think it's important to ask, what is important to you?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it important to you?
Mm-hmm.
I think clarity on that will give us far more of a sense of what we need to do in each situation
mm-hmm.
than knowing what's right or wrong. Or
well, and it makes so much sense, you know, that your 4-year-old loves playing that what if game, because for a 4-year-old, so much of what is happening in their life depends on what happens in the world.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. What if this, what if that, you know, my brother, his little boy, I think he just is about to turn 5 or just turned 5. He likes to play, one of his favorite songs is Major Tom
uh-huh.
by David Bowie. And so he likes to talk
classy
to his dad
kid.
About what if this happened. Like, you know, he'll say to his dad, do you think Major Tom died? Right? And they have this discussion a lot at bedtime. Well, what if this? Well, what if this with Major Tom? So it makes sense for little kids to play this what if game, right?
Yeah.
And there's some safety that they're establishing in the what if, right? That is a feeling of preparedness, or, you know, kind of this idea of what it might look like. But for adults, that tends to now come more from within us than mm-hmm. it does just in the world, right?
Well, and on a brain sense, young kids are doing really concrete operational thinking. That's what their brain can do.
Mm-hmm.
As we get older, like into our mid to late teens, for some people it's early 20s, we really get into that abstract thinking phase.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, where Pia Melody talks about how becoming a functional adult or healing from codependency is really about emotionally maturing.
Right.
And I think emotionally maturing is where our skill set and the things that we're willing and able to use match our abilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you've got the brain structures in place to do abstract thinking, you probably need to have a boundary system in place that can be more in the abstract, more principle-led, mm-hmm. more vision-led.
Right. So that the way I respond to what happens in my external environment is aligning with the principles and the values that I hold and the image that I have of myself.
Yeah. And I see a feedback loop there. And with all feedback loops, I think it can be a very positive one in that it grows something, or it can be a negative one in that it reinforces things that are not helpful for us. So like when we have adequate, appropriate boundaries, I think our sense of self grows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as our sense of self grows, we have appropriate, adequate boundaries. And those, I think, can mutually reinforce each mm-hmm. other. Now, if we don't have accurate self-knowledge, which we talked about in the last episode, our boundaries aren't going to be reflected,
mm-hmm.
or our self-knowledge is not going to be reflected in our boundaries. And we may get this incorrect perception of ourselves or our world that's reinforced
mm-hmm.
by that loop. So, I want to go back to the inner observer a little bit. I think one of the ways we strengthen our inner observer is we check it out with trusted people.
Yeah.
You know, he talked in that section on boundaries that is a voice that is our, what is it? Something like our best thinking that's not looking for shortcuts.
Yeah. Or something like that. He says, from the inside, trust your personal discernments that do not offer shortcuts.
I think one of the ways that we check out, does it offer shortcuts, is we really have to check that out with mm-hmm. other people.
Mm-hmm.
We have to use our support people. We have to use our sponsors, the people that we trust.
Right.
To help us with that.
Yeah. And really, I mean, because we see this with clients, sometimes there's a feeling of like, oh, I have to ask permission for everything. That's not what that's about.
That's not functional adulthood either.
No, it's not. That I mean, the fact that you're asking permission really kind of clarifies that we're in a childlike state.
Yep.
But being a functional adult is able to, hey, I call people up and say, can I run something by you? Here's what's going on for me.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your perspective. Tell mm-hmm. me how you see this. Am I overreacting? Am I not giving them the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to add in this episode?
Nothing that's coming to mind right away.
Okay. So, chew on that for a week, and we'll be back next week. We also want to remind you that your story matters. Remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter, and don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. You can add any comments or questions that you have. You can actually interact with us. Thanks.
Thank you. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.